Live from our nation's capital, it's the Inside Scoop with Mark Levin.
Their child will be hurt or killed just for being a young black man in a hooded sweatshirt like Trayvon, or listening to music in a car like Jordan Davis, whose mother Lucy is here. Now, we know the gun lobby is powerful. I believe it's the most powerful lobby in Washington. And we know that some candidates will say or do anything to keep them happy. Just yesterday at the NRA's annual convention, Donald Trump said that in his very first hour as president, heaven forbid, he would overturn President Obama's actions to strengthen background checks. He'd mandate that every school in America allow guns in classrooms. Every school, he said. That idea isn't just way out there, it's dangerous. This is someone running to be president of the United States of America, a country facing a gun violence epidemic, and he's talking about more guns in our schools. He's talking about more hatred and division in our streets. If you want to imagine what Trump's America will look like, picture more kids at risk of violence and bigotry. Picture more anger and fear. Ask any of the mothers here tonight if they want to live in that kind of America. Enough is enough.
That, of course, is the Democratic nominee. Oh, excuse me. Yes, there's a primary still going on. I should say the presumptive Democratic nominee for president, Hillary Clinton. And I want to tell you today why I love Hillary Clinton. I really like her. And it's funny. I think they're giving her a really hard time. And I'm not just talking about the people on the right who've been demonizing her for, 30 years now? No, I'm talking about some on the left that have been attacking Hillary Clinton. And yes, there is still a primary going on. And please understand, I want to tell you why I love Hillary, not why I'm anti-Bernie, why I'm pro-Hillary. Hillary, to me, reminds me, to some extent myself, in a sense that she's earnest, she's wonky, she really cares about the details, and she really cares. She's got a really big heart. But she's been hardened by experience, tempered, I should say, by experience. She's careful, more careful than I am, to be sure. And I think sometimes that carefulness, that introversion, which again is unlike myself, turns some people off. I've told this story before. I want to tell it again. I think it's important understanding who the woman who I think will be the next president of the United States, who she is, and why I just love Hillary Clinton in a way that I think few Americans do, to be honest with you. I think people respect Hillary. I think people appreciate Hillary. I think people feel comfortable and safe with Hillary. But she doesn't get that love. Bernie Sanders supporters love Bernie. And Trump supporters? Yeah, they love Trump. Why isn't Hillary getting the love? Can we give Hillary a little bit of love? Bill Clinton, he got lots of love. President Obama, he gets lots of love. Let's get some love for my woman, Hillary. Let me tell you why. I first met Hillary Clinton after I became the chief lawyer to Congressman Barney Frank. I was his legislative counsel. I was the lawyer on his personal staff. I was the one drafting his legislation, his legislative memos, working with other members of Congress and their staff to promote progressive values, liberal values, democratic values. I met Hillary for the first time at a political reception. This was 2001. I'd only been working for Barney a few months. And she was standing right next to her husband, Bill Clinton. Now, Hillary standing next to Bill is probably like the Earth next to the sun. I mean, the Earth is a really, really cool place. But next to the sun, it just seems small and lifeless. And that's really not an attack on Hillary so much as it is an amazement at the incredible charisma of this man, our former president, Bill Clinton. He may be the most charismatic person on the planet. I don't know. When Bill Clinton shakes your hand and looks you in the eye and smiles at you, you know it's not true. Your mind says it's not true, but something in you says, wow, he thinks I'm the most important person in the world right now. Bill Clinton is the best schmoozer I've ever met. And, you know, I just remember grinning ear to ear as I chatted with him, and so much so that my face kind of hurt afterwards. You ever smiled so hard your face hurts? That's what it's like with Bill Clinton. He is totally apart from his policies, totally apart from his intelligence, totally apart from the fact that I very much appreciated the vast majority of his presidency. The man's got charm, okay? It's hard to express if you haven't met him personally. I remember, you ever watch the cartoon The Family Guy? I love that cartoon. I don't know if it's still on. One of my favorites. Very, very intelligent cartoon. Anyway, there's this episode of The Family Guy where I forget the names of the people there. You know, the woman and the man, they're from Rhode Island. The fat guy, Peter. It was Peter and Lois. So Peter and Lois are there with the Stewie, the baby. If you've seen it, you know what I'm talking about. If not, I'll just, whatever, suburban family. And the storyline is, you know, they have these ridiculous storylines. The storyline is that Bill Clinton's car is runs out of gas right outside of their home. And so Bill Clinton comes in. They got, you know, an actor doing the Bill Clinton impersonations. And he comes in and he meets Lois and he completely charms the pants off of her. And, a few moments later, you see him and Lois in bed and someone smoking a cigarette. You get the point. Not very subtle. Anyway, the show goes on and Peter and Lois have this whole conflict between them. It's, she cheated on him with Bill Clinton, and it's terrible. And is their marriage going to survive? And this whole thing. And then at the resolution is at the end of this comedic cartoon. Bill Clinton comes back and spends some time alone with Peter. And then you see a few minutes later, Peter and Bill Clinton in bed and someone smoking a cigarette. You get the point. Not very subtle. Don't know why I'm sharing this. But my point is the man is charming, okay? Bill Clinton has an incredible amount of charm. So after meeting Bill Clinton, standing beside him was Hillary Clinton, who was, of course, a new senator from New York. She was the First Lady of the United States. She shook my hand. I'm sure she must have smiled and said a couple words that I don't remember, but it's hard to convey because this is all a very non-verbal kind of thing. But after meeting Bill Clinton, I gotta admit, I wasn't too impressed with Hillary. She seemed nice and all, but I went home telling everyone about my encounter with Bill Clinton, and I think I mentioned I met Hillary too. Okay, I don't mean to belabor the point. You get it. By the way, I'm a graduate of Yale Law School, and so is Bill and Hillary Clinton. And I was there some, I don't know, 20 years after they were there. But I talked to my professors about Bill and Hillary, then Hillary Rodham, because they were in the same class. And, you know, it gets some insight, gets you some personal stories that you haven't heard elsewhere before, a little gossip. And I learned that Bill Clinton was so smart and so competent, such a great student, that he was third in his class at Yale Law School, which only has like about 170 people per class. But he was third out of 170 at the top law school in the nation. Hillary Rodham was first in the class. So if Bill Clinton is brilliant, Hillary Clinton is brilliant plus one. So just keep that in the back of your mind for a second. All right. So I met Hillary Clinton a second time a few months later. It was a political function. I don't remember what function it was. There was a receiving line. She spoke. She gave a good speech. Not one that honestly I remember to this day. I don't even remember what the political function was. Shook her hand. There was a receiving line. She seemed nice. I couldn't tell you what we talked about. That was it. And I remember talking to someone afterwards, saying I'd met Hillary Clinton twice. And, you know, she seemed nice and all. And I knew she was smart. But, yeah, you know, she was the wife of the former president. And I didn't really like that someone would become a senator based on those sort of nepotistic connections. You know, I mean, she should do it on her own. And yeah, I know Robert Kennedy did it based on John Kennedy. And so I guess if you're really good, then we could put aside the fact that it's part of a family legacy. But I remember thinking, yeah, you know, people asked me what I thought of Hillary. I was like, she's, you know, I don't know. She's there because she's a wife of Bill Clinton. I wasn't so impressed. I'll be honest with you. That was my initial impression of Hillary Clinton. When I come back from break, I want to tell you how it all changed. How I started as a somewhat down on Hillary, to be honest with you, and became a huge fan of the HRC. The details when we come back. 888-48-MARK. Call in. Back after this.
He's a Bible-quoting, Constitution-loving, flag-waving, red-blooded, liberal American. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Back to the Aggressive Progressive, Mark Levin.
Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. I'm your host, Mark Levin, sharing my own personal stories with Hillary Rodham Clinton. Well, I tell you why I'm a big fan. Why I actually love her. No, people respect her. People like her policies. But how many people say, I love Hillary Clinton? Well, I'm one of them. I love Hillary Clinton. So before the break, I told you why at first, based on her political presence when she was a new United States senator from New York, I wasn't that impressed with her. Her star got outshone by the bright sun of Bill Clinton. And then I was assigned to work with her. That's even an exaggeration, honestly. I only met her for a work session once. Let me set the stage. I was Congressman Barney Frank's chief legislative counsel. Barney, of course, is a Democrat, and we Democrats were in the minority in the House at the time. This is 2002. George Bush is president of the United States, chosen by the Supreme Court, even though Gore won the election. That's another issue. You've heard me fulminate about that. But George Bush is president. The House is Republican. The Senate has a bare Democratic majority. In fact, I believe it was 50-50 at the time. Or maybe it was 51-49 after Jeffords switched. I think it was 51-49. Anyway, George Bush has this proposal. He's calling it the faith-based initiative. George Bush is all about getting those evangelical voters, and he wants to pay them off. He wants to use government funds to support religious institutions. Now, in one sense, that's not a problem. In fact, the government has given money to Catholic Charities, a Jewish Federation, United Lutheran Ministries since the 70s. So that's actually something that's always been done. But, and this is a crucial distinction, Catholic Charities, Jewish Federation, United Lutheran Ministries do not discriminate. Some people don't know that. Catholic Charities does not serve only Catholics, and it doesn't employ only Catholics. Catholics, Protestants, Jews, Buddhists, they do not discriminate on the basis of religion in who they hire or in who they serve. Yeah, its leadership tends to be Catholic. The name helps in that regard. And sure, they do good things out of their Catholic principles, taking care of the poor, feeding the hungry, clothing people, you know, sheltering the homeless. Sure. But they serve everybody. The same is true with Jewish Federation. Yes, the leadership tends to be Jewish, but they serve everybody, they hire everybody, and they do, frankly, similar work, as do the Lutherans, feeding the hungry and finding shelters for the homeless. They do good work, and the government has helped them, meaning you and me, the taxpayers, but I'm okay with that, has given money to these religious charities for decades. Well, George Bush in 2002 added a twist. He said, who we're not helping? We're not helping the Salvation Army, which sounds like a great group, except they discriminate against gay people. We're not helping the Southern Baptists. Well, that sounds good. What's interesting, Southern Baptists, Jews, Catholics, and Lutherans, because the Southern Baptists only hire Southern Baptists. So he said, we need to help all religions, not just the ones like the Jews and the Catholics that don't discriminate, but also the ones that do discriminate. Salvation Army, which does not serve gay or transgendered people, or the Baptists, which will not hire non-Baptists. And when you think about it, it's not just discrimination on the basis of sexual orientation and religion, it's also racial discrimination. After all, Martin Luther King famously said the most segregated time and hour of the week is 11 a.m. on a Sunday. We all know there are black churches and white churches. And if you have a church that is a white church or a black church, it is less likely to be part of the community and share with everybody. So Bush wanted to take this proposal and expand it to really discriminatory religions. And Barney Frank and others were determined to stop him. We tried, we fought in the House, we worked really hard. I worked with Congressman Jerry Nadler, Bobby Scott. We fought and we lost. Republicans controlled the House. They won. George Bush's faith-based initiative passed through my committee, the Judiciary Committee, in the House. It was going on to the Senate. And the Senate was the only way to stop it. I mean, George Bush obviously was going to sign it. It was his initiative. And we had trouble in the Senate. A majority of the senators had co-sponsored the legislation. Senator Joe Lieberman was a big supporter. And he had persuaded them to do it. And one of those co-sponsors of the legislation was Hillary Rodham Clinton. It was my job to change her mind. I'll tell you what happened right after the break.
And now, the voice of reason in an unreasonable world, Mark Levine.
Welcome back to The Inside Scoop. I am your host, Mark Levine, reporting live from the Center for American Progress in Washington, D.C., and telling you why I love Hillary Clinton. And some of it comes down to personal experience. And, you know, if you don't know the woman, if you've never met her, if you've only seen her from afar or from those hilarious Saturday Night Live episodes, I want to tell you who the real Hillary Rodham Clinton is. So I set the stage in the last half hour, talked about George Bush's faith-based initiative in 2002, which would allow the government to discriminate on the basis of religion in employment, and also, to a significant extent, on the basis of sexual orientation and race. At the time, the Salvation Army, for example, was not serving gay and lesbian and transgendered people. They were discriminating against them. They weren't hiring them, and they were treating them badly in their facilities. And frankly, they were also requiring people to say a prayer before they could eat. Well, you know, if you require someone to say a prayer before they eat, they're, what if they're not of the particular religious evangelical Christianity that the Salvation Army was pitching? In fact, I have to tell you, I don't give the Salvation Army. Now, maybe they've changed their policies now. I hope so. I tend to give the United Way or other charities because I think people should be helped regardless of their religious affiliation. If someone's hungry, they should be able to eat. If someone needs clothing or shelter, there shouldn't be a religious test, in my humble opinion. But anyway, George Bush was going to put forward his faith-based initiative, and his biggest supporter among the Democrats was Senator Joe Lieberman. Now, today, most Democrats think of Joe Lieberman as a turncoat, right? I mean, he turned against the Democrats. He was beaten by a Democrat in the Connecticut primary. He went ahead and endorsed John McCain in 2008 and was kind of run out of the party. But back in 2002, Lieberman was still a little bit of a hero. He had been the Democrats' vice presidential nominee with Al Gore, and he'd won the election. Gore Lieberman won the 2000 election. They were legitimately elected as president and vice president. And so if Gore was the everyone's favorite Democrat, Joe Lieberman was kind of up there with number two. He was very, very important. And Joe Lieberman is a very religious person, and he was supporting George Bush's faith-based initiative. He's also one of the more conservative Democrats, and so that worked out for him. And he had gotten not just all the Republicans on board, but most of the Democrats. So you got to understand how uphill this battle was. I mean, here we'd lost in the House. It was Bush's initiative. He was going to sign the bill. The Republicans in the Senate were lost to me. And the majority of Democrats were lost to me, too, including Hillary Clinton. You can see why Barney Frank didn't take this mission himself. He sent his loyal aide, me, to attempt to do the impossible. And so I went door to door, memo in hand. I had written this detailed 12-page memo explaining exactly how this bill, George Bush's faith-based initiative, would allow discrimination on the basis of religion. And it was really tricky to write because there was this clause, the non-discrimination clause, the one that Joe Lieberman was putting forward to all the Democratic senators. And it said you can't discriminate on the basis of religion. It said that on its face. But hidden in the bill, and I'm a lawyer, and part of being a lawyer is being good at puzzles, reading the details, reading between the lines, looking for holes, looking for loopholes. And there was a massive loophole in this bill. It was hidden in the non-discrimination clause. And it was some ambiguous term. I won't get into too much wonky details, but it was an ambiguous term that if the president were to issue an executive order, would define the term and allow for discrimination. It would allow for actually a modification of the Civil Rights Act of 1964, which said that you couldn't discriminate on the basis of religion or race or national origin or other things. It would modify the religious clause and allow religious discrimination by the government. It was really deadly, and it was hidden in plain sight. And I'd done the legal research. I'd looked. I'd seen that George Bush had issued an executive order in the past on a similar type language and had used it to break holes in it and to allow this to happen. A very obscure executive order. Anyway, I presented my research to Barney. He said, Mark, you're right. It's strong. He approved my memo. And I sat out, memo in hand, Senate office to Senate office. Okay, it sounds like I'm a vacuum cleaner salesman. I did call in advance. I did make appointments. I did send my memo in advance. And I started talking with senator after senator. And I was getting nowhere. The one that I most recall was talking with Senator Mary Landrieu of Louisiana, pretty conservative Democratic senator. And we met for 10 minutes, maybe. And I sat across the table from her and a few aides. And there was my memo in front of her, looking as beautiful and pristine as the nice cream white paper it was printed on. It was clean white paper with solid, you know, black letters and perfectly stapled. Didn't have a crease in it. And that's a really bad sign. Mary Landrieu hadn't read my memo. It hadn't been touched. It didn't have her fingerprints on it. You know how when you see something, a 12-page stapled memo, you know, there's little fold around the staples? Nah. Untouched. Well, our conversation was a lot like that memo. Maybe it lasted 10 minutes. I think it did, but not much longer. I fervently explained how this would allow for discrimination, and I don't know, Mary Landry, her eyes glazed over. She mumbled something about Joe Lieberman, said all the Democrats had signed on, thanked me for my time. And before I knew it, I was out the door. I almost imagine when they play the movie, you know, the memo being thrown out behind me, you know, and stay out, boom, boom. Okay, wasn't that dramatic, but you get the point. Well, Mary Landry was cordial, but I had gotten nowhere. I went to talk to a few more senators. I remember Barney Frank went with me when we talked to Ted Kennedy. Ted Kennedy got on board, but we knew Ted Kennedy would be on board. He's a solid liberal. That wasn't the linchpin. The linchpin was Hillary Rodham Clinton. And Barney, I don't want to say he'd given up, but let's just say that he knew that the task was really uphill. And he sent me. He didn't go to this meeting. And so here I am knocking on the door of the Senate office of Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton by myself, armed with nothing but my memo. And I walk into her nice little Senate office, and there she is with maybe three aides, young people around her. And there on the coffee table is my 12-page memo. Didn't look anything like Mary Landry's. The ink was smudged. There were highlights on almost every page. There was all this writing in the margins. The staple was about to fall off. Clearly, this is a memo that had been read and reread and analyzed and highlighted. I mean, the memo was torn to pieces, and I couldn't be happier. And Hillary Clinton, no time for small talk. I think Mary Landry gave me small talk in that 10 minutes. She's like, she said, Mark, I want to talk to you about footnote 4. Not, hey, Mark, how are you? Good to see you. Glad you came in. Happy to... No. Mark, I want to talk to you about footnote 4. I was elated. Footnote 4 was the heart of my argument. Footnote 4 was where I showed how George Bush had used a loophole in the past to take this same language in the non-discrimination clause and blow a Mack truck through it to allow all kinds of discrimination. An obscure bill, it was the Substance Abuse Act, didn't matter. The point was she saw the same parallels I saw. She got it before I walked in the room. My memo had convinced her, and we started talking about footnote 4. And when Hillary Clinton is talking about policy, she is as, I don't know if charming is the word. Let's say she's as engaging as Bill Clinton when he's shaking your hand in a rope line. Boy, does she know her facts. She knows her law. She knows her precedent. She knows her history. We had the most wonky, lawyer-like discussion you could imagine. I guess it's a discussion only a lawyer can love. Kind of like when you get two engineers together and they're talking way over your head about the, you know, Robo Fitzer and how it fits into the tiny chip. I don't know. My nephew's an engineer. Ask him. We got into this wonky lawyer discussion. And I think I started grinning ear to ear the way I had been with Bill Clinton. I guess that was the moment I started to fall in love with Hillary Rodham Clinton. But the best part of the story is yet to come. After the break, I want to tell you how my little discussion with Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton made a pretty major difference, probably the greatest impact I've ever had so far in American history. I'll tell you after the break.
He's a Harvard economist and a Yale lawyer. He does not keep up with the Kardashians. He's Mark Levin. Give him a call now at 888-488-MARK. That's 888-488-6275. Who says nerds can't be fun? It's Mark Levin.
Yeah, who says nerds can't be fun? This is Mark Levin. Welcome back to the Inside Scoop. And I'm kind of finding it hard to believe myself that here I am telling a dramatic story about a legal memo in a footnote. But hey, this is the kind of stuff that gets wonks like me excited. How thrilling was it to be talking with Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton of New York, knowing that my conversation with her could make the difference into whether or not, for the first time in American history, the government would explicitly discriminate on the basis of religion, would allow government dollars to be used to employ people where they said, oh, I'm sorry, you're not Baptist, you can't work here. Oh, no, you don't belong to the white church, you can't work here. Oh, no, we don't accept gay people, transgender people. It's against the religion of the people receiving the government grant. And I was determined to try to stop it, and I'd gotten nowhere with other senators. Then I came to Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton's store. As I said, we were enmeshed in footnote 4. And Hillary Clinton got it right away. The same words I used that made Mary Landrieu's eyes glaze over, Hillary Clinton got in an instant. She was asking me questions more quickly than I could even make the statements, and they were good, solid, incisive questions. She got to the point. She understood that the language, the offending language that seemed like it was okay, had been used before with a Bush executive order and a prior example. We talked about the kind of executive order that Bush could do the exact same thing again, how could allow discrimination, and she started nodding, and she started getting it, and she said, Mark, if you're right, I've got to change my vote. Well, her aides were astonished. I mean, they were there, young, you know, aides, probably my age, in their 20s, maybe their 30s. And they were like, Senator Clinton, you've already co-sponsored the bill. You've gone on record. I mean, you've publicly endorsed this bill. You know, Senator Lieberman's staff wouldn't be really happy if you. And she said, look, Joe told me that this was a good clause. And Mark's telling me it's not. And she said, if Mark's right, and she looked at her aides and she pointed at them, her eyes kind of flashing, I remember. She said, if Mark's right and I don't change my vote, how would that look? And her aide kind of slinked away. And then, I'll never forget this, her head pivots. She's just kind of told off her aide saying, if Mark's right, you know, how would that look? And kind of made her aide slink away. And then she turned and she looked right into my eyes. She pointed right at me. She said, Mark, we're going to check to see if you're right. She's staring right at me. And I remember, I'm not going to break the gaze. We're going to check to see if you're right. We're going to look at the old legislation, the old executive order that you mentioned. We're going to look at what could be done as a new executive order. We're going to check the language. We're going to check with Joe Lieberman's staff. We're going to make sure you're right. And I'm like, Senator Clinton, you should. Check on me. Give me that backup. You check on me. She said, but if you're right, and we'll check to see if you're right, then not only am I going to change my vote on this, I'm going to do my best to persuade other Democrats to do the same. And I said, Senator Clinton, that's all I've been asking of anyone. You check to see if I'm right, and then see what you can do. We shook hands, the meeting was over, and I was on cloud 9. But I knew, you know, politicians say stuff, right? They say stuff. I felt it was good, but I she was checking on me, I was checking on her. Within 1 week of our meeting, her aide called me to tell me that she had removed her name from the bill. She was no longer a supporter. She was going to come out against it. Within 2 weeks of our meeting, I got even better news. She had persuaded more than a dozen Democratic senators, including Senator Mary Landrieu, to switch their votes. Now we had enough votes to defeat the bill. And when the bill came on the floor of the Senate, it was voted down. George Bush's faith-based initiative never did become law because of my conversation with Senator Hillary Rodham Clinton. Let me tell you why this matters so much to me. I hear all this, I don't know a nicer word to say than crap. I got to think of another one. Nastiness. About Hillary Rodham Clinton. She's all politician. She doesn't, you know, have a heart. Let me tell you something. She had some political courage there. She switched her vote. She had been on record supporting this. But when persuaded with strong argument that she was wrong, she did the right thing. And I'll tell you something else. I'm glad she said to me, Mark, I'm going to check on it. How terrible would it be if I just persuaded her in an instant? No, she checked. She dotted every I, she crossed every T, she looked under the table. She, you know, went through that memo with a fine-tooth comb. And I guarantee you, it wasn't just her aides checking. I guarantee you, Hillary Rodham Clinton looked at this personally herself. This woman is thorough. She is brilliant. And her heart is in the right place. You got to make a strong argument and a good argument to her, of course, as you should have to. But when Hillary Rodham Clinton is president of the United States, I am confident that she will take the best advice given to her by her advisors, analyze it, take it apart, deconstruct it, understand it in details that even the analysts don't get, and put it together to make the very best policy of the United States of America. You don't have to agree with every decision she's made. You don't have to agree that she's the most charming person in the world. I'll say it. She's not, okay? I think she's getting better. But she's not the most charming person in the world. To me, the president of the United States I want is not the person with the most charm. Donald Trump is an idiot and a racist jerk. And I got to tell you something. He's got a lot of charm. I can't deny it. I watch Donald Trump and I cringe and I shake my head, but I can't stop watching. It's like a car wreck. He is amusing. He's entertaining. He may well be a fascist, but I can't deny the entertainment value. And neither can the press. When it comes to entertainment factor, I'm sorry, Donald Trump beats Hillary Clinton. But when it comes to intelligence and heart and drive and courage, when it comes to sheer brilliance and ability to grasp a complex argument, when it comes to being willing to listen to a nobody, who am I? I'm a staffer to a congressman. And she's taking my argument seriously, not because it's Mark Levine, but because they're damn good arguments. When she hears a good argument, she latches onto it and is even willing to overrule her staff. Do you see now why I love Hillary Clinton? Do you see now why I think she's going to make an excellent president of the United States? Can you see now why I endorse her with no reservation whatsoever? If you live in California, you have a primary coming up. I understand the people that love Bernie Sanders. I'm not attacking Bernie Sanders. Bernie Sanders says some things that I agree with, things like single-payer health care, which may not be practical right now, but certainly is something that I'd like to see as a long-term goal of the United States. I'm not anti-Bernie. In fact, I think he's pushed Hillary in the right direction, meaning the left direction, on things like the Trans-Pacific Partnership, on things like minimum wage. But when it comes to overall knowledge, intelligence, competence, someone who, yes, I trust at 3 a.m. in the morning, my vote's for Hillary Rodham Clinton. And I encourage you to do the same. So please, folks, when your friends, your colleagues talk to you about Hillary, share the love. Tell them my story. Let people know why some of us are just enthusiastic and think she's going to be one of the best presidents of the United States. This is Mark Levine, signing off.